We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
That's the emotional brain. That's the amygdala hijack. Like, you're in the moment, you're anxious, you're going to respond inappropriately, and then it's going to escalate. So if you can just keep control very briefly and not, you know, not get engaged emotionally, you usually will be able to de-escalate the situation.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. With conflicts around health and safety likely to escalate as we head into the holiday season, the NRF Foundation recently released training credentials in retail operations and customer conflict prevention to arm frontline employees with the skills they need to better manage our health and safety and resolve customer conflicts. The Customer Conflict Prevention Training, in partnership with the Crisis Prevention Institute, will train customer-facing retail employees on how to identify signs of conflict, minimize risk, and effectively de-escalate if needed. Susan Driscoll is the president of the Crisis Prevention Institute, where she oversees design, instruction, and training, among many other operations at CPI. Today, she joins us on the Retail Gets Real podcast to discuss how the foundation's new training credentials will give retail workers the tools to promote safety and the confidence to operate efficiently during the pandemic. Susan, welcome to Retail Gets Real.
Thank you, Bill. It's great to be here.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good.
I'm great. Surviving,
no,
like all of us right
no,
now.
No better way to be in these days.
Right.
Good is great. Lottie Watts, my co-host, my colleague, and my friend. Welcome to Retail Gets Real as my co-host. It's great. I'm so excited.
It's so wonderful to be here. Thank you, Bill.
It's great to have you here. So, Susan Driscoll, tell us a little about, just to get started, Susan Driscoll's path to the Crisis Prevention Institute. How did you get there?
Sure. Absolutely. So, I spent the bulk of my career in educational publishing, where I worked for college level courses, basic markets, developing program materials. I moved into healthcare training, worked for Wolters Kluwer Health, did healthcare training for 7 years and really focused on nursing and medicine, and learned about the Crisis Prevention Institute then because behavioral health is one of our core markets. Became fascinated with it, moved from New York to Milwaukee, Wisconsin to join the Crisis Prevention Institute 3 years ago. And now I'm really focused on this de-escalation training specifically.
Tell us about the work of the Crisis Prevention Institute. Who do you work with? What kind of programs do you have?
Absolutely. So Crisis Prevention Institute actually has been around for 40 years. People in behavioral health or special education largely know about us because those were our core segments getting started. We started doing de-escalation training and restrictive intervention training, so physical holds and restraints for people who were acting up and needed to be held to be calm. And we founded the company with the notion that a hold can actually be therapeutic. Our principles are based on care, welfare, safety, and security. And security means not security guards, but the security of an individual, making them feel safe and avoiding trauma. So although the history is based on restrictive interventions, it's from a therapeutic support kind of perspective. We teach 4 stages of a crisis: anxiety, defensive risk behavior, and tension reduction. And what we realized recently is the world is actually in a heightened sense of anxiety, and that our training, while it was, you know, formerly geared just to a specific kind of worker, actually the training was relevant to a much broader population.
Susan, this is so incredibly interesting because what you just said was something that I witnessed, and I didn't realize what was going on until you just described the holding part of it. And that was on a metro one morning on the way to the office. There was a child that got on with his, probably, I would say he had to have been maybe 11 or 12 years old, and he got on with his grandmother, and he was acting up in a very, very bad way. And he was using some very offensive language with some of the older people that were on the car, and made some threatening moves and got up and ran. And it was pandemonium. I mean, it was just absolute pandemonium. And this one fellow grabbed the kid and held him tight and just and kind of got his attention away and just talked to him and talked to him and talked to him. And you talk about a de-escalation. I mean, and everybody kind of, it's when that guy took over, everybody kind of just melted back, and he just stayed with that kid the entire time, got off with him and his grandmother at the next stop. But I thought that was so extraordinary to watch that guy. I was impressed because I was like, that guy knew exactly what he was doing. I didn't know what he was doing, but he knew what he was doing. And so that is what you're talking about, correct?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. And I think in that case, you probably saw that child relax. That's
correct.
The tension reduction phase. And if you're doing these techniques properly, you actually get to tension reduction. But, you know, our goal at Crisis Prevention Institute is to make sure you never get to that risk behavior part.
Correct.
And there are absolutely things you can do. And for obviously, when we're talking about retail workers, we don't want them to get there. We want to avoid it.
Correct.
We want them to call for help when they get there rather than grab people.
Yeah, I would not recommend that at all.
But it is, you know, there are defined stages of a crisis. And when you can recognize them, and know how to intervene at that stage, that's you know, incredibly powerful individually.
Bonnie, I promise I'm going to let you in here. I promise, I swear. But I'm very intrigued by this. So you get to sit there and watch all of these horrible videos on social media. And as you sit there, are you just like, no, that's not what you do? Or do you sit there and you're like, if they had only done this, that never would have escalated to this point. Does that frustrate you?
I do believe everybody could value, you know, could benefit from our training. I don't know if it frustrates me as much as I think it's just basic skills based. And yes, I'd like everybody to have these skills because I do think it would make a difference. Not in every case, but, you know, just to get a little bit into the training, we're emotional people. These, you know, we're in a state of heightened emotion because of the pandemic and the election and all the bad stuff with global warming, the stuff that's all happening. What we teach is how to get your thinking brain in control of a situation. And so your emotional brain takes over for your emotional brain. And it's easy when somebody is coming at you or criticizing you or acting defensively, challenging you, to react emotionally. Our training really teaches you how to avoid getting emotional. And it is by engaging that thinking brain. And so even identifying something as simple as thinking about, what stage of the crisis are they in? Your rational brain is taking over. And just that simple act of, oh, wow, they're in the defensive stage now, or wow, they're going into risk behavior, that simple act engages the rational brain and helps you maintain control.
I just think it's so fascinating because at this moment where so much has changed and there are just still things that people need to be able to go out and do, we still need to be able to go out and shop and get a lot of the things that we need that help keep us going. And so just thinking about how this type of training really meets that moment for retail workers and for stores and then for shoppers. You're talking about that heightened state, that anxious state that we're really all in, but we still have to go and do what we need to do. How do these trainings really build those skills for workers? And if you can talk about why that's important to be armed with those skills right now.
Our training is based on the fact that behavior influences behavior. You cannot control somebody else's behavior. You can absolutely control your behavior. And what we know is that when your behavior, when you're responding appropriately, then they will de-escalate. So it's about the skills that you learn to be able to control your behavior so that you're controlling their behavior. And it works. It's why we've been so successful for 40 years. In it, when you face somebody who's in an anxiety stage, what we also train is that this behavior is a form of distress. To Bill's earlier point with the kid on the metro, he was distressed, and that is what manifests in behavior. So you have to understand first that there is distress and respond as you would to any distressed person. So we challenge workers or any staff member, look at this person through a different lens. They can be attacking, but look at them as a distressed person. And when you do that, you automatically are more empathetic toward them. And we're all distressed. We have no control over anything. We have no power to do anything. So of course we're going to be distressed. And of course then we're going to get to the next stage, which is defensiveness. It's just normal for a worker or for, a customer to be in that state. We teach that when somebody's anxious, be kind, be empathetic. We call it, supportive, but it's just be kind to them. Understand that they're in distress and all they want is some sort of control over a life during, of which now there's very little control. At the defensive stage, if you give them some sort of control, they will likely respond positively. So that can be giving them a choice. Don't engage in a power struggle where you're yes, no, because you're going to lose that battle or escalate them to risk behavior. But if you give them a choice, in the training itself, we have a scenario where the worker says, would you like to step out of line and talk this through, or would you like me to get my manager? It's what we call a fail-safe choice because they have to choose something. But the act of giving them the control to make a choice often can de-escalate a situation. So it's little techniques like that that we train all around giving people some control. And especially now when there is no control, that can really make a difference.
Because in the name of the course and the Crisis Prevention Institute is that word prevention. And so there's all of these different things that can happen to bring some sense of order, some sense of comfort. I'm thinking of things where places have really great line management, where they have someone who knows how to communicate clearly about what to do, where to go. And it seems to me like some building in something like that, training people to do something like that can help prevent going on down the line.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. They seem like, of course, it's just like common sense. But again, it's that skill building. It's engaging the rational brain, thinking things through, knowing, having a skill to respond in the moment. That just takes practice. And that's what our training is all about.
Susan.
Yes.
Claudia, those were great questions, by the way. I could actually just sit back and listen to the two of you go, and because it is incredibly interesting. But aren't there some people who are just, I'm not trying to be all encompassing here, but I mean, aren't there just some people who are, angry and who just want to be angry?
Yes. So in many cases, you acknowledge their anger, just acknowledging, again, it's that empathy and kindness. I completely understand why you don't want to wear a mask. I completely understand that you're frustrated because you didn't win, your candidate didn't win the election. And yet, we're just trying to keep our workers safe. So acknowledging that anger often diffuses it. In some cases, they just want to beat somebody up and there's nothing you can do about that except to call for help. And so obviously at risk behavior for a retail worker, you're going to follow your organization's policies and procedures and get somebody in to help you or clear other people out of the way to keep them safe. Mostly though, we get people angrier by not acknowledging their feelings, making them feel helpless or stupid. And so we teach techniques, very simple techniques of acknowledge and then, change the subject or stick to your point.
again, I'm really finding this incredibly interesting. And as you're talking, I'm thinking, why wouldn't this be? I mean, we get taught so many things in, you know, in our lives through, you know, school, whether it be, you know, high school or college. Why wouldn't they be teaching this? Why wouldn't this just be basic? Because, and especially in today's world, you'd think that they would prioritize that, because it just seems to me that people are more angry today, more distressed, and more willing to, you know, play it out than they've ever been. I mean, I've seen people do things that are just insane, and they're normal people for the most part.
Right. Well, you know, they are what's normal, right?
Yeah, right, anymore. Right, okay.
We teach that there are very few truths in the world. And, you know, it's just, you have an assessment that this person isn't normal, but they think they're very normal. They've created a reality that makes sense to them. It's their way of staying in control. So you have to respond to just the basic needs to control. To your question of why isn't taught everywhere, I think that we now understand the difference parts of the brain, and, you know, the amygdala hijack, which is the emotional brain taking over, is it's not a new concept, but it's a new term. I think this whole notion of how you train your brain to be better, it applies to resilience, it applies to de-escalation. It's skill building to build that muscle better.
Right.
I don't know if the brain is a muscle, but
you need to exercise it. So, you know,
that's right. It
sounds to me like it's a muscle. So you call that the medulla hijack?
The amygdala hijack.
Amygdala.
Amygdala hijack. Because the hijack is a term, it's basically your emotional brain takes over. And even though you know you shouldn't be reacting the way you are, you can't help yourself.
So I can warn people now. I could say, I feel an amygdala hijack coming on. Please bear with me.
Well, I'm not sure you'd say that. You could say that. I don't know. They might roll their eyes at you. But.
Well, I just think it'd be a good way of just letting people know, stand back. This is going to be ugly for a little while.
I think if your amygdala hijacks your rational brain, you don't.
it's too late. It's been hijacked. It's done. So being defensive, you know, I get accused all the time of being defensive, and I am a very emotional person. I totally admit it. And so, so the rational brain, some would argue that that is a very small part of what's in this head. But you have to train that, though. I mean, to not be emotional, to not be defensive. And one time, I mean, actually, I was in a meeting and I knew what we were meeting about. I knew I was going to get defensive. So I wrote down on a piece of paper and literally put it in front of me, don't get defensive. And it worked. Right. I mean, I had to constantly remind myself, be, you know, conversational, learn from this experience. But man, that was hard.
Yeah, of course it's hard. This isn't easy. And it's not easy for a retail worker to not go into work with a whole bunch of anxiety.
Right. Totally.
So I think, you know, it's important for store managers to understand this and be, you know, they're coming, everybody is anxious, so let's just treat each other with kindness.
Yeah.
And, you know, if that were the starting point, a lot would be avoided. But when you see the defense, so we teach the stages of defensive behavior. It's, you know, asking a challenging question. What do you mean I have to wear a mask? And then it's refusing is the next stage. I absolutely am not going to wear a mask. What are you, crazy? So we teach what to do at each of those stages to de-escalate. Again, it's breaking it down, breaking that crisis moment into little parts and knowing what to do disarms that person and puts the retail worker in control.
Because Susan, your instinct might be to respond and reply in a very different way.
That's the emotional brain. That's the amygdala hijack. Like, you're in the moment, you're anxious, you're going to respond inappropriately, and then it's going to escalate. So if you can just keep control very briefly and not get engaged emotionally, you usually will be able to de-escalate the situation. We call that rational detachment. You literally detach from the situation. It's not about you. It's about their distress, and you are not the cause of their distress. There's something else, a lot else going on. You just happen to be in front of them being the, you know, the recipient of a lot of other distress in their life.
It strikes me also as a skill to build, right? Bill, you were talking through some strategies that you were using because you were aware and you said, I need to plan and know how to do this differently. So just like stores have policies and procedures around any number of things, there's also now this need to have those policies, procedures, and strategies around this.
That's right. And it is skills that need to be built. And that's what our training is all about, the specific skills.
In the store, the de-escalation is incredibly important. And it's a phenomenal opportunity to address this head on. But I also see this where this would be very helpful for a management, class where you, not a certification, but just some kind of a seminar where you're teaching, and it's not de-escalation of, physical violence or anything. It is a de-escalation of your thinking. So how you if you have a colleague that's getting angry, or if you're giving a review and they get defensive, or how you approach that using those same techniques to de-escalate a very serious, potentially violent situation, translating that into a meeting where you're trying to reach some form of understanding and agreement and having the same set of skills.
And so actually in one of our programs, we teach delivering bad news, how to deliver bad news. You have to let somebody, you're laying somebody off, you had a complaint against them. We actually teach you how to do that. It's, again, just a skill. It's a series of skills that make it, they just help you feel more empowered as a worker or as a manager.
Well, I'm going to tell Matt Shea, who's the president and CEO of the National Retail Federation, that when we have the opportunity to have people come into our office, I want you to be one of the first people to come to talk to the team. I think that would be absolutely fantastic about the behavioral science behind de-escalation, not just of these situations in the stores, but situations we face every single day of our lives.
Absolutely. I'd be honored to do that.
I think Matt would love it just because I'm probably the worst person that gets so defensive so often. He'd probably be like, I need these skills.
So in addition to taking the 70-minute course, then we have Susan all to ourselves. Yep. That would be fantastic.
Yep. I'd love that.
We're going to make that happen. All right. Before we go, if you've never listened to Retail Gets Real before, you wouldn't know, but perhaps you do. And we have a section of this and we call it Rapid Fire.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is Rapid Fire. Thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
Rapid Fire is not anything other than just asking a question and you answering with the first thing that comes to mind. It's not a gotcha, I promise. We're not here to embarrass you. It's just, but you can't think about it.
Okay.
Don't put that rational mind to work. Think emotionally.
It's hard. I've been so trained.
Well, this should be really interesting. All right. Okay. Maybe you should be asking us. All right. Lottie, start us off.
What is something that brings you joy?
My children.
Excellent. What is the one thing that is always in Susan Driscoll's refrigerator?
Chicken.
Excellent.
What is the book that you keep rereading?
Micro-Resilience.
Who's that by?
Bonnie St. John and Alan Haynes. It's actually a really interesting book of little hacks that you can do to, again, it's more about controlling, self-control, but resilience is a big topic, but there are little things that make a big difference. And it teaches, I'll give you an example that was fascinating to me. Hydrating before you take a test, drinking water before you take a test, or hydrating before something like this helps you actually to stay calm. There's the biology behind it. So that's just it's a whole book of little hacks like that. Really interesting.
So I need to get a holster with water so I can stay calm all the time.
Or we'll just pour it over your head. I don't know.
So,
not sure that works, but...
vacation, mountains or beach?
Beach.
Amen. Body.
Winter or summer?
Summer.
And last question. During this pandemic, what is the one comfort food that comes to mind?
Wow. You know, the problem with the pandemic is I couldn't get the comfort food.
Uh-oh.
So it would have been fried chicken and french fries, except for months I couldn't have it.
Yep.
So I lost 7 pounds in that. I'm kind of a comfort food person. What was the comfort food? I guess I would say it would be like cheese and crackers or something, or macaroni and cheese.
I can't imagine the amount of weight I would have lost if I couldn't get beer, but you could always find beer. There was no question about it.
That's true.
Susan, that was very good. And if people want to learn more about your program, where should they go to on the internet?
Well, they should go to crisisprevention.com. But if they want to learn more about the program we did together, I think they should visit the nrffoundation.org RiseUp.
Nice. Very nicely done. Wow, that's really great. Well, Susan, as you can tell, I've been fascinated by this whole thing. And I think it's absolutely fantastic what you're doing. And we are so grateful for having had the opportunity to partner with you all. I think this is an extraordinary program that's gotten a lot of attention, that's going to make a big difference. And we just appreciate you and the organization. And we can't wait to get you in person to give us some more insights. So thanks
Sounds
again.
Great. Can't wait. Thank you.
And Lottie, excellent co-hosting. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill, for the invitation. Susan, it was great to talk with you. And once again, thank you for partnering with us on this important training. It really, again, meets that moment that we're in, and we know it's going to help retail workers build those skills and really do better for themselves, their families, and their communities.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
And thank all of you out there for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. You can find more information about today's discussion and more at nrf.com. And please send your feedback and episode ideas to podcast@nrf.com. Thanks again for listening. And during this time of a pandemic, all I can say is please be safe and be well. Look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks again.